Thank you for that, Chris. And can I thank Fragerman for their sponsorship of these national events? And thank you for your insights on this important topic of global migration, which CEDA and other organisations benefit from. I'd also like to thank my fellow authors in this report, Gabriella D'Souza, our senior economist here at CEDA, who's here today, and also Henry Sherrell, a noted immigration expert who wrote for us as well, who can't be here today. You'd have to say that population and immigration are never too far from the headlines, and the public debate really only intensified in the lead up to the federal election this year. Now, we think this debate is fundamentally important to Australia's future economic development. The growth, makeup, and settlement of Australia's population will be major determinants of future living standards. CEDA has put population front and centre on its research agenda, highlighting population as one of five areas fundamentally important to Australia's future progress in our Connecting People with Progress report last year. Over the past 70 years, more than 7 million permanent migrants have called Australia home, with more than 2 million coming in the last decade. And today, 28% of Australians were born overseas, and nearly half of all Australians have at least one parent who was born elsewhere. Australia's managed all of this with broad community consensus. As the Scanlon Foundation finds, 80% of Australians believe that immigration has been good for the Australian economy. But immigration has become an increasingly contested topic in recent years. Many of these concerns centre around the scale of immigration and the concentrating settlement in cities, and the impact on existing infrastructure, services, public amenity, jobs, and education opportunities. If Australia is to get immigration policy right, then we need a public debate that is considered, circumspect, forward-looking, and based on fact. But this can only be achieved with a better understanding of some of the finer points of the policy, the nature of migrant flows, and the impact. The public debate often centres on permanent migration or fails to draw the distinction between permanent and temporary migration. For this reason, we chose to shine a light on temporary migration in this report. And we particularly wanted to shine a light on the issue of temporary skilled migration. This area has so often been a lightning rod for concerns about Australian jobs and wages. With an ageing population, the need to import talent and expertise to build up our skills base in industries and plug short-term gaps in others will persist. While the distinction is often poorly understood, temporary migration has been growing in importance since World War II and has accelerated in the last two decades. Today, there are around 2 million people on some form of temporary visa. And many people would be surprised to learn that around a third of these are New Zealand citizens on special category visas with work and study rights. With education now Australia's third largest export, you might be less surprised to hear that around a quarter of those on temporary visas are international students. There are around 230,000 people on bridging visas. These are people who have applied for other visas, but their original visa has expired in the meantime. And the number of working holiday makers has grown to almost 135,000, based on a fairly strong labour market after the GFC, but also the low Aussie dollar. And finally, there are almost 150,000 temporary skilled migrants, an area that I'll talk about in further detail shortly. Temporary migration has certainly been very responsive to changes in the economy and changes in policy. Consider the experience during our once-in-a-generation mining investment boom. At the height of the boom, there were more than 68,000 primary temporary visas granted in one year. Last year, that figure was just half that. With continuing economic strength and policy changes to enable universities to charge international students full fees, there has been an almost fourfold rise in the number of international students in the last two decades. These are all interesting numbers, but how does temporary migration impact Australia's total population? Well, the answer to this question is different over the short and long term. In the short term, temporary migration is the biggest contributor to the level of net overseas migration and population. In 2016-17, temporary migrants accounted for 70% of net migration and 45% of total population growth. Now, in the longer term, the biggest lever that impacts net migration is the number of permanent visas granted, and this is subject to a cap. In the last decade, the population grew by 3.7 million, with net migration contributing 2.25 million. During the same period, 1.9 million permanent visas were granted, highlighting that the permanent program is the driving force of population growth. But of course, temporary migration can act as an important pathway to permanent migration. Since at least 2012-13, over half of the permanent skilled visas were granted to temporary skilled migrants already on shore. In contrast, international students are much less likely to become permanent citizens. Only 16% remain in Australia on a permanent visa after 20 years. The de facto pathway from temporary skilled migration into permanent migration is, in our view, a big positive for Australia. Temporary skilled migrants are young, productive, well-educated, and they've already proven themselves in the Australian workforce. The system maintains the delineation between the temporary and permanent streams, but with avenues for successful transition to permanent residency. But this doesn't mean that governments can simply set and forget, leaving the temporary migration system to run its course. As the population of temporary migrants grows, there are important implications for governments, and particularly the federal government. Workplace laws must be enforced and complied with to prevent exploitation of temporary migrant workers, a practice which undermines Australia's reputation. The Migrant Worker Task Force, chaired by Alan Fells, has shown legislators and regulators the way to address this. It's also imperative that administrative burden and uncertainty in the visa processing system is minimised as the number of applications grows. The number of bridging visas is a good proxy for how the system is performing, and at 230,000, it is at its highest level on record. Australia should also not inadvertently create a class of perpetual temporary migrants for whom permanent migration and the associated safety nets are always just out of reach. Excluding temporary migrants from New Zealand, there were an estimated 46,000 people who arrived on temporary visas around 2008 and remained on one at the end of 2016. And finally, governments need to factor in temporary migration stocks and flows into their planning for budgets, infrastructure, and service delivery. Anxiety about jobs stemming from migration, including temporary migration, has been a consistent theme for at least the last decade, waxing and waning with changing labour market conditions and the apparent availability of jobs. In CEDA's report, senior economist Gabriella D'Souza puts the claims and assertions to the test by rigorously assessing whether the success of recent waves of migrants has come at the expense of local workers. The economic modelling using ABS data shows that recently arrived migrants have not had a negative impact on the wages or participation rates of local workers. In actual fact, the results suggest that at certain levels of qualification and experience, an increasing proportion of migrants is associated with positive changes in wages and employment. The results build on previous modelling undertaken for the Productivity Commission in 2016, showing that the entry of migrants did not have a negative effect on the labour market outcomes of local workers. The results are highlighted in the report, while an appendix on the CEDA website contains further detail on the approach taken to this modelling. Despite this, there is no doubt that Australia's training and education system can do a much better job of equipping local workers with the skills that they need. CEDA has been vocal about addressing the challenges in vocational education, where real funding has not grown in the last decade. But regardless of how good Australia's training and education system is, it will not always be fast enough to respond to emerging skills shortages, particularly large, lumpy, and complex projects. This is where temporary skilled migration has a key role to play under the newly coined subclass 482 visa. The temporary skilled migration program seeks to target short-term and strategic long-term skills shortages. while doing so in a way that does not present a barrier to appropriately skilled Australians securing those jobs. And Australia confronts plenty of workforce challenges in the medium to long term. Just to take two examples, we'll need 18,000 more cybersecurity workers by 2026 against the 500 graduates that are currently coming out of universities each year. Australia also needs to triple its current aged care workforce within 3 decades to meet anticipated demand. But temporary skilled migration isn't just about plugging gaps. It's about building human capital through the transfer of knowledge, skills, and international connections. Advanced manufacturers like CSL and Cochlear have utilised temporary skilled migration to build up their skills base to enable them to undertake advanced manufacturing in Australia. This is the temporary skilled shortage visa process, which we mapped. I'll test everyone on it in a moment. But as you can see, there's a fairly rigorous set of mechanisms there for both applicants and sponsoring employers, whether it's the list of eligible occupations, salary thresholds to ensure that this is not undercutting wages, labour market testing by employers, English language requirements, and also a Skilling Australians Fund levy paid by sponsoring employers towards the skills training of Australian workers. This results in a working age cohort of visa holders, including family and dependents, equating to less than 1% of the labour force. Even at the height of the mining boom, this number was less than 1.4%. So what do we know about Australia's temporary skilled migrants? Well, they come from countries like the United Kingdom, India, and the Philippines. They are young, 96% are under the age of 50. They are developers, ICT business analysts, university lecturers, and cooks. Around 70% reside in New South Wales and Victoria, states with the lowest rates of unemployment at the present time. And they have an average base salary of around $95,000. Addressing skill shortages and maintaining confidence that Australian workers are given first priority for jobs has not been easy amid changing labour market conditions and community attitudes. As we document in the report, this has led to the system being in a constant state of flux. It has been reviewed by multiple bodies with varying terms of reference, often at 2 regular intervals, to properly understand the impact of the last round of changes to the scheme. We have been very strong at CEDA about emphasising the importance of evaluation, but this is overkill. The 2017 changes to the scheme were particularly stark, taking all stakeholders by surprise by eliminating the 457 visa altogether and replacing it with this 482 visa. The changes resulted in a 1/3 reduction in eligible occupations and a separation into 2 lists with different conditions and restrictions. So we do think that there are a number of ways to embed greater stability and lift stakeholder confidence in the system. First, the federal government should be more transparent about the data and methods used in assessing whether occupations are included on the skilled occupation list. Current information amounts to the periodic release of a few pages of advice rather than detailed analysis. And I contrast this with the United Kingdom's Migration Advisory Committee, which just published an almost 400-page report outlining data analysis, occupation shortage rankings, and stakeholder feedback. More information will make decision makers more accountable and enhance the confidence of all stakeholders in the process for identifying skills shortages. Improving this process may also pave the way to revisit labour market testing and how it is conducted, a process that international policymakers say is unreliable and employers find overly prescriptive and inflexible. Second, the skilled occupation lists rely on the Australian-New Zealand Standard Classification of Occupations, ANSCO. It just rolls off the tongue, you'd have to say. It hasn't been reviewed in 6 years, an absolute eternity given the incredible technological and workforce change experienced over recent years. The Australian Bureau of Statistics should be funded to undertake this review as a matter of priority. And third, Australia should have a dedicated, streamlined path for intra-company transfers in line with the United States and United Kingdom. For large multinational firms, Their most talented individuals are generally highly mobile, moving across jurisdictions to transfer knowledge, but also to develop their talents and future leadership. This should be encouraged for both Australians gaining experience abroad and talented international executives gaining experience here in Australia. This internal movement of human resources is distinctly different to completely new entrants to the Australian labour market. There also needs to be a clearer nexus between the skills shortages that give rise to the use of temporary skilled visas in the first place and the Skilling Australian Fund levy. This should underpin the allocation of funds to local training initiatives. There are also steps that governments can take to embed better evaluation and policy making in the future. Following the lead of the UK's Migration Advisory Committee, Australia should establish an independent committee of labour market specialists to undertake analysis, consultation, and advice on the formulation of skilled occupation lists. The Federal Treasurer should also task the Productivity Commission with evaluating the temporary skill shortage visa program every 3 to 5 years. We must move from sporadic reviews to regular, systematic evaluation. So in conclusion, Australia has long been a proponent of open global markets with the free movement of goods, services and capital, critical to the success of our economy, even amid rising trade tensions globally. The same vigour for open markets does not always prevail when it comes to welcoming migrants or attracting global skills and expertise into our workforce. Yet the vibrancy of our economy and society has been shaped by migration, and it will continue to be in the years ahead. Australia's future economic development will require the right people at the right time, whether this is to work, study, holiday, or apply ideas and technology to create new high-value goods and services. If we're to do this in the best interests of migrants and the community, we will need to build greater consensus and confidence in our approach to temporary migration. Thanks for your attention, and I look forward to the discussion.